Thank goodness this is the Philadelphia Society, and the theme of the conference is Taming the Leviathan, and not the American Political Science Association. Because I'm going to begin with what should be a rather non-controversial proposition. That if you want to tame the Leviathan, it's necessary to revisit, among other things, secession and the framers of the Confederate Constitution. Now bear with me and let me make my case. In reaction to the centralizing tendencies of the New Deal, the New Frontier, the Great Society, and the conformist centralizing policies of the Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan administrations, the devolution revolution, another way of expressing localism, was deemed to be an antidote by the politicos and scholars during and since the Reagan administration. Even President Clinton rhetorically announced in 1996 that the era of big government is over, implying that centralization was bottoming out. As the word implies, devolution, localism, involves the shifting of public policy prerogatives from a center to periphery, or more specifically, from the national to state and local governments. Interest in devolution stemmed from a variety of motivations, ranging from national budgetary constraints to theoretical convictions partial to state and local governments' administrative capabilities. But obscured by the devolution rhetoric is the more important issue of popular control secured by states' rights federalism. The distinguishing feature of states' rights federalism vis-a-vis devolution is the former state-based popular control over a substantial realm of public policy, not subservient to national policymakers' dictates. It is a federalism in which national and state policy prerogatives are demarcated along a marginal dividing line of constitutionally recognized, reserved, and delegated powers. To date, devolution's policy-making function falls far short of a substantive return to meaningful states' rights federalism. This is not to say that devolution, localism, is devoid of short-term public policy merit. However, by focusing on constitutional rule of law and juridical developments and explicating the parameters of national powers vis-a-vis states' rights, there is ample evidence that in the final analysis, devolution, localism, is primarily an administrative maneuver in the ongoing national policy hegemony over the states. Recent developments notwithstanding, and intergovernmental transfers and such, is meaningful American federalism, for all intents and purposes, dying? In large measure, the answer to this question hinges on the definition of federalism. A rudimental definition of federalism is not to be confused with minimal discretionary powers of states and a more or less unitary national government. The term ultimately involves the bond that ties the states collectively together in an associational union, administered by a national government with delegated, in effect, limited powers, functioning as the agent of the states. The states are republican in form and the foundation of popular control. The nature of the bond connecting the states together is critical to understanding the nature of the union and the legitimate powers of the national government in relation to the association of states. Within the scheme of republicanism, it is significant if the bond, the mortar of the union, if you will, maintaining the association of states is primarily consensual or coercive. It is a self-evident truth, one that no intellectually honest person can deny, that the proposed 1787 Constitution would not have been ratified had the document specified that the Union would be coercively maintained against the will of one or more states. The prospect of applying coercion against a state or states was anathema to the late 18th century political culture, both North and South, upon which the national government was being crafted. Nevertheless, the old political culture has been supplanted by one that is increasingly hostile even to the discussion of authentic federalism. Authentic federalism would accommodate a model of states' rights, which could effectively serve as an effective barrier to the unconstitutional and coercive exercise of national power. If the Republican form is to be maintained, the popular sovereignty of even just one state could not be crushed under the weight of coercive national policy. Admittedly, this model national supremacy conjures up the specter of state nullification, interposition, and even secession. By the way, all of those principles are being debated in a very healthy way in the discussions regarding the European Union. To the extent that one is spooked by such conceptual ghosts from the past, may manifest the degree of one's nationalistic fervor in contradistinction to an objective consideration of popular control, liberty, within the federal context and the Republican form of government, as guaranteed by Article 4 of the U.S. Constitution. On the other hand, devolution models of federalism are highly vulnerable to being usurped by the forces of centralization. States' rights, however, is a firmer foundation, much more capable of withstanding the forces of centralization and the commensurate demise of popular control within the context of the Republican form of government. Now, we may all be Southerners in a sense, as the national government is increasingly being incorporated into a international, global, what the rhetoric is used primarily, the human family unit of government. And let me just go through a list of what I'm talking about. And there's much more here that I don't have time to discuss, but in the European Court of Justice and in the European discussions on the United States of Europe, they're discussing these very issues. And they're discussing and making reference to the American phenomenon of